And welcome to another episode of Tactical Tips. I'm Rich.
I'm Pat.
And Tom.
And today we're talking about the meta. So we've now been with War Machine Mark 3 for coming up to 2 years. I think it's 2 years in June. So we're just going to have a bit of a recap on the road so far. So do you guys remember the start of Mark 3?
I do. It's quite funny because at the start of Mark 3, I lock a law. I was like, all right, I'm gonna stick with Crix. And then at the beginning of Mark 3, Crix was quite in a weird place. There's like all the like because of the drop from Mark 2 power level to Mark 3 power level is so big from my perspective. So I had a lot of struggle at the beginning of Mark 3 just trying to plug Mark 2 formula list into like Mark 3, and I just got crushed constantly. So I was like, this is yeah. So like this can't be. Like, especially because we had the WTC coming up in like 2 months at that point. It's like, I can't be playing Crix in the WTC. It would just be like a miserable year. So I like emergency first walked into Kador, and actually I had a really good start at Kador and took it to like a local tournament. I was actually, and then did pretty well, and then took it to a convention in Dallas. It was called Texicon, and then took it down. So I was feeling good. Pretty good. Kador at that point playing Sorcerer 1 and Eras 2, and I felt like it covered a lot of the issues. Like back then, it was like Circle, and it was like, and then had like pretty strong alpha, and then abusing like stationary with the Rocketeers. It was really good. And then I just, it was pretty accidental because at that point, I haven't really thought about playing Circle at that point, but locally people wanted to like practice against it, so I just picked up Wyrmwood just to like play against local people to give them a practice, and then it just like clicked immediately, and then like didn't look back, swapped the Circle, and then had a blast with it because they were so overpowered back then with the five Fury Sentry Stones and then the 14-inch feet with Wyrmwood, and like just people didn't have good answers, and then. And that was quite good, and then eventually they got there. So, but
So from the days where you used to terrorize everyone with Wyrmwood, and I'd forgotten about those till you mentioned that, Tom. It's like,
yeah.
oh my lord. Do you remember when every pair was if you got Wyrmwood answer? So it's been like there's been a fair few things since then that have happened. So in fact there's been the game's in a completely different place. So I think some of the stuff that comes up and springs to mind, I think scenario the SR 2017 turned up, and that was felt like a step change in the game. There's obviously the themes have turned up. We've had CID, had some faction balances. I mean, what else are the big things that have happened from Wyrmwood killing everyone to now?
Yeah, I think definitely the introduction of themes as the way to play the game has been the single biggest change. Like at the days of Wyrmwood were days when no one had theme forces, right? And since then, I think if you looked at lists from that time period, like 18 months ago, they would be completely different to lists you see now at tournaments. There'd probably be no two lists that were the same, which is one of the hallmarks, I think, of this edition of the game is it changes much more rapidly than the previous one. Then, like you said, the steamrollers changing, scenarios becoming faster, the need to contest more different parts of the zone with more different types of models definitely made list change. And the introduction of CID promoting new models and improving the power level of old models like battle engines. Battle engines were
That's
something you
big.
never used to see, and now they're ubiquitous. The introduction of Grimkin through CID was a big deal, right? And Grimkin have gone on to be very good and very impactful, something you definitely have to consider when you build lists. So we've seen huge changes to the kind of list people are playing in their factions. We've seen new models and new factions, and we've seen new scenarios. So just huge changes.
Huge, yeah. Yeah, how would you like sum up the state of the game now?
I think it's awesome. I think the state of War Machine, I think competitively speaking, it's the best it's ever been. I think there's more. Okay, it's hard to, like, I honestly think it's the best ever been. How do I justify that, or how do I measure it? I think there's more playable models in every faction now overall than there's ever been in the past. Now, what I don't mean by that is I don't necessarily mean that every faction has every model be playable. And maybe some factions even have fewer models that they consider to be tournament playable than they did in the past. But I think as a collective group, for every faction put together, more stuff is widely played than ever before. I think every single faction in the game is capable of winning games and winning events in the hands of a skilled player. And every faction has multiple good theme forces and casters that you have to consider when you're playing. And if you don't know how to play into them, then they will just beat you.
Yeah, that's really interesting with those. And I guess we'll come on to that as well. I feel like when I speak to people at the game at the minute, I agree with everything you've said. For me, one of the biggest shifts is it's that change from Mark to this is the list of things you need to beat. And if you don't leave home without these answers, then don't bother or make sure you're going for fun. and in where the game is now, it feels like you've got some things that you need to beat and you definitely need some answers. But it feels a lot more flexible and a lot more dynamic. And it feels like it's changing a lot more than it ever has done, which I know some people are loving, and yeah, there's areas of the community that aren't loving that as much, especially on the casual side, because there's just so much to learn and there's so much to take in. And once you've done that, it's changing. So people who come down every couple of months to play, it's just like a completely new game every time they play it. So you've got that, and then yeah, that dynamic side. On the other side, there are, I feel like, some factions and casters that we'll come on to, but there are some kind of lists and factions and casters that are beginning to be not the boogeyman like Wormwood, i.e. you just can't beat this person or yeah, having a nightmare, but just are, right, you need your X answer, you need your pair that deals with this faction. So
yeah.
Are they two sides of the same coin?
I think maybe they are. I think, well, one of the things is that as long as War Machine has been played competitively, there's always been top dogs, right? There's always been casters that are problematic that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
And one of the things we've seen over the last 18 months is Privateer Press have been happy to nerf those casters, right? We've seen nerfs to so many casters, thinking back. We've seen nerfs to Karchev, High Reclaimer, yep. Una, Wormwood, Madrak 2, Haley 2, Denegra 1. That's just off the top of my head. There's probably
others. Yeah, that's quite a long list. Yeah.
The biggest one, Haley 1.
Oh. Of course, poor Haley Run. Rest in peace.
Oh, so, wow. She's long dead and buried. I can't remember the last time I saw her. Good Lord.
Yeah, exactly, right? So we've seen all these changes to powerful casters, and that has also had a big impact, right? Because it's one of the things that's contributed to the meta changing a lot is, by comparison, in Mark 2, top casters were on top for years and years, right? Like, yeah. Haley 2 was never out of style, whereas she is out of style now.
Is someone sawing a box in half?
Yeah, I think that must have been Tom.
Cool. Do you want to do that bit again?
Yeah, what were we, where should I go? Or what were we talking about?
So some casters, if you look back to Mark 2, some casters never out of style.
Yeah, if you look back to Mark II, some casters were never out of style. Haley II was always popular. Some of the Denegras were always popular and so on and so forth. Scar 1. Whereas in this edition of the game and in the meta that we've seen evolve over the last 18 months, casters have become popular, but then they've receded. And I can't think of a single caster that has been a popular tournament staple for the entire duration of Mark 3, and that's only been 18 months.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot more diverse, there's been a lot more variety in a short space of time.
I think the only one that probably in that spot is probably just Scar.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but even Scar was really unpopular when Mark 3 first came out, right? And Crick's players were comparing her to Mark 2 in the feat change.
Yeah.
Deeming her unplayable, which obviously time has time has shown that that wasn't the case. Yeah, but she was certainly not a powerhouse at the beginning of Mach 3.
Yeah, that was me at the beginning of Mach 3.
Yeah, knee-jerking.
Yeah.
But I think with some of that, I mean, the beginning of Mach 3, there was a period of time that I think you have to just put to one side, because everyone tried to take the Mark II lists and put them into Mark III lists and play in the same way, and found that things had changed. And yeah, and then we had nerfs, things like Una 2 sprung to mind, where she was stomping everyone, and then she got nerfed and everyone went knee-jerk, ah, terrible, and now people are picking her up again and being like, no, she's actually still really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got those. Coven was one that sprung to mind. As for Cricks, they seem to have been popular for quite a while. I think whenever I've been thinking about Cricks for all of Mark III, Coven have been there.
Yep. I mean, Coven is another caster who got nerfed, right? Which I didn't even think of when I was listing them off.
Yeah.
Who we're starting to see less now.
Yes.
But you're right, they're one that's been more popular for longer.
Yep. Yeah.
But certainly I think one of the hallmarks of the meta is that these shifts are happening often. And you have to, I think, although you have to definitely know which casters are going to be popular at events that you attend, I think over time we think less and less about answering particular casters and more about answering archetypes. And this has been compounded, I think, by themes and how themes encourage you to list build into certain archetypes.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you can start grouping themes like your Legion of Steel, your Scourge of the Broken Coast into infantry spam.
Yeah.
Some examples, things like that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, especially because of the way the 3 points work in themes, right? Most themes encourage you to either go battle group heavy or infantry heavy.
Yeah.
And there aren't many themes. There's a couple, but there aren't many themes at all that encourage actually balanced list composition.
Yeah. I'm seeing more with those people just not trying to max out 3 points. I feel that's something that's happening a bit more now. Of people not trying to just go, right, I need, you know, the 60 points of units to get my 3-3 solos. They're going, actually, I'm going to play a quote-unquote a solo down, but mm-hmm. I'm going to have more flexibility because I've got a balance list. So I've noticed that more of my lists have only got 2-3 cards in. Where at the minute they're all suppression tankers, so I don't feel too bad about it. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's a whole separate conversation that rumbles on, I think, every week on Facebook about the quote-unquote broken 3 models, like, you know, the 7.3 solos, and you can take 29 points of blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is that relevant. I mean, overall, it feels like you've got factions are changing and moving up and down in their power ratings, if you like. Mm-hmm. And then within each of those factions, you've got casters that are much more likely to cycle in and out. And it's pointing to me towards a meta that rewards people for knowing their faction and knowing the strength and depth of their faction, which all factions have in different ways. And also people who are building things that answer archetypes, as opposed to kind of the hard text that you saw in Mark II. So with some of that, actually, do you agree with that or different view on it?
I think it's true to an extent. Because, like, theme forces are prevalent in this nowadays, like, your answers are, like, quite limited, so you're kind of just... But instead of the Mark II list building where you're, like, you pick a caster and then you put the things that solve problems in it, now you, like, pick... You have to look at all the theme forces and see what answers are available, and then you go from there.
Mm. Do you think, like, the Merc and Minion inclusions have made that answering within a narrow range of theme? Do you reckon that's given people enough answers? It's like the Mistspeak is a great example in Hordes. Feels like that's in every list. But do you think there's enough in with Mercs and Minions if themes are limiting?
I think that's a really good question. Go on, Tom.
Yeah, I think it's almost enough. But we'll have to see, like, because of how theme force are structured to just be limited to, like, certain type of models, like you can only play, like, a trenchers, you can play, like, gun mages. Like, because of that, I think you're still picking list based on theme, and you're not going like, because now I can have one Merc and one Merc unit and a Stella, and now I can play, I can pick like some other theme. Like, I still think you're more tied down to one theme, and then it's helpful. And then the Mercs are just like helpful things.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the addition is that basically you've got one answer that you can take, sometimes two answers that you can take in your themes. So they help in that they let you answer very specific things, but what they don't do is they don't give you the complete toolbox within a single list. That means it's hard to make your list be an all-comers list, you know, in terms of answers. And I think what we see more and more in the best lists in the meta is not so much that they're great answer lists, but they have strong threats that other theme forces can sometimes struggle to deal with. So this, I think, kind of nicely leads to where we think the different factions are right now within the meta. Mm. I know that one thing we've talked about before is wanting to do a snapshot, right? We can talk about, we all go to a lot of events all over the world. and I think it would be cool to talk about what we think the meta looks like right now and what we think's on top. But I don't think that, I think what we say right now is going to be true, or at least as true as it can be. I don't think it's going to be the same a couple of months from now, but I think we can do a snapshot of what's on top and why. And that might give us some learning for current events, but also show us or hint towards what changes we might expect in the future.
Yeah, cool.
So with that in mind, what do you guys think is really strong in the meta right now?
Crix. I'm a Kador player. Crix. Just fucking Crix. Oh my god. Crix. So Crix, I think Crix have some amazing theme forces, and that seems to be their strength. So they've, okay, Ghost Fleet's cycling out, but Host is still fantastic, and they've then got Black Industries and Satixis as well. And the within those, they've had some casters that come out of CID that pose some very challenging questions, and like you just said, project a lot of threats. So you've got like the Slayer spam, which is still quite scary, with armor 21 and mobility, etc., and 9 or 10 of them flying across the table. And then you've got your Denny 2 incorporeal. So you have these very difficult things to answer that have a lot of vectors on the table. And alongside that, you've also got two lists that require very, very different answers. So high range, low power, high accuracy, regardless of power, shooting is fantastic into Satixis if you can get it. So things like the sprays, things like that, that is really going to struggle into Slayers. So I think Crix in a great place because they ask questions. I don't think they're really answering things. I think they're just throwing different types of undead and scary stuff at you. And the pairs are very, very difficult to answer with one list. And even if you quote unquote drop if the Crix player drops the wrong list, they're still not in a bad shout. So if you drop your heavy spam to try and go toe to toe with heavies, Satixis are still really scary into that. They can still wreck them. Banes can still wreck that. And also you've then got things like the feedback assassination into like with your Kador Jacks, it's pretty tricky. So I think Crix are definitely up there.
Yeah, I think this is the most flexible Crix has ever been. Like back in Mar 2, even though Crix was like considered one of the top factions, the only difference between the builds was like, all right, so my Denny list has two Arknails and my Scar list has a Kraken, and then like, but like the majority of lists are just like hardline, just like infantry spam. Our infantry are really efficient. We're just gonna take the caster that makes them the best to do what they do, and then that's how we're gonna win games. Like you had the Denny 1 gunline, you had the smorgasbord infantry list with the Scar 1, and then you have like the Bane spam with Gatsby 2, and then you have like the Blood Gorgers with Gatsby 3. Like But at the end of the day, Mark II Curse was all about infantry. But nowadays you have Flare Spam with Lich, you have Gatsby 3, you have the Thixis list run by either Denny, by Scar or Lich 1. You have the Dark Host list run by Coven, by Scar 1. Like the double Wraith engine list is great. And they all ask like very unique questions. Like if you to deal with Slayers, can you deal with defense 13, armor 19, and melee armor 21 against shooting Warjacks that have power 22 combo strikes? Like against the Dark Host, like can you deal with these double Wraith engine that are incorporeal and then like are hit like a truck with either Scar and or like have stealth and Coven? Like they just have so many good threats and it's hard to line up the answers to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think Krix are one of the top dogs right now. And I think, like you said, it's down to they've got really powerful theme forces and then they've got a broad range of casters that can dial those theme forces up in different ways, which gives them a lot of variety yep. on the table. I think in addition to Krix, there's other factions that I put in that top tier. One of them is for sure Signar, which has been vying with Krix now in the meta, I think, for 8 to 10 months.
Yeah.
Top dog. Both of their top casters got nerfed. First Haley 2, then Denegra 1. But their lists have adapted. And I think the strength in Signar right now is not in flexibility, but it's in power. And it's the relative power of Haley 3 and Nemo 3 versus the current things you see in the meta. I don't actually want to talk about them in detail because we have a whole other episode where we talked about that pair and why it's great. But I think, although Signar is a deep faction with a lot of variety, it's the power of those two casters that help it to be near the top of the meta right now.
Yep.
What do you guys think?
I'd really, really agree with that. And if you're playing Signar, I think it's really hard to take anything else. Like they have good lists. I mean, Haley 2 is still very good. You know, Kray's very good. You've got a load of other casters that are compelling to take. I feel like with Ghost Fleet cycling out, they don't need to explore things like Siege, which were coming along. So it's enabled them to just focus on raw power and output, which has been Haley 3 in trenches and obviously Nemo 3. I think as well, this week we've got 2018 CID. But the calls for Haley 3 to have something done to her from a scenario point of view doesn't look like that's going ahead. If anything, I think they're going to be even more prevalent in scenario like Mirage. You can just have Echoes cause a nightmare and lock down mm-hmm. so many scoring zones of the board and being even more obnoxious. So yeah, I think it's those two. It's just, you know, why do you leave home without them? They're great.
Yeah, I do think that you don't need both in your pair, but I think every Signar list, in my opinion, should have one of the two for a yeah. strong pairing. And I do think the strongest pair right now is probably just both together.
Yeah, because they do. I mean, they're both kind of gun lines. They both are predominantly guns. Obviously, you've got long runners, and then you've got the Striders. But how they do it's very different. So you've got mm-hmm. you know, Jacks in one, infantry in the other. You've got battle engines in one. You've got Haleys in the other, and that type of thing. And I think some of the tools that one of them certainly Haley 3 doesn't really struggle with, but maybe can do, so like opposing cloud walls or very, very high defense, even no longer going to tear stuff up. You know, the E-leaps and boosted E-leaps, you know, they can get around a lot of things. And both of them have such good assassination threats as well. So they both have ways of playing out of some fairly, fairly tricky spots if they need to.
Yep, absurd power level is the key to victory in Signar.
Cool. I still think Grimkin's up there as well, if you look at those two. I mean, Grimkin burst onto the scene last year. Feels like people are starting to learn how to deal with what was perceived as, you know, the broken aspect of Grimkin, which was the Gremlin Swarms. But even with people playing with Gremlin Swarms, you know, finding tools to those, they still feel so good. And they are so unique to play against. Obviously, limited faction, and Pat, this is your area of expertise, limited faction, mm-hmm. limited themes, smaller roster of casters. So on paper, there's a lot of things saying that these guys should be quite limited and inflexible, but they feel like they are just again really strong. So what's going on with Grimkin?
I think I agree with you that Grimkin are definitely in that top tier. Why? Great question. I do think Gremlin Swarms are totally overrated. Like, they're good. They are
You've just
relevant
broken the
for chess.
internet, Pat. There are people throwing their speakers out the just like, what now?
Gosh. So the reason I think they're overrated is they're nice solos that stop you losing on scenario in some matchups.
Yep.
But as people become aware of them, it doesn't take much to nullify their impact. In that, because their purpose, the thing that makes them really strong is towing into zones and contesting. And they only really do that one at a time inside zones. So you don't need a huge amount of answers to stop them doing the thing they do well, right? You only need a single way to kill a Gremlin Swarm a turn to make sure the really relevant zone that you want to score is not contested by Gremlin Swarms, for example. But anyway, that's not why I don't think they're strong because of Gremlin Swarms. I think they're strong because I think right now they are the best denial list in the game, and they have kind of the pseudo control that comes from that. I think the Dark Menagerie layering high defensive stats with spell resistance from Arcane Vortex, with an ample supply of Shield Guards, and with the layered defenses of Arcana makes the Grimkin Brick like the toughest, best denial list in the game, which is always historically has always been a tough problem to answer. There's always in the meta, there's always something that is a really good brick that denies attacks into it, and I think right now Grimkin does that the best. So that's why I think they're high up there.
Do you think people have figured out how to play around them?
Yeah, somewhat. I think they can still be vulnerable. Although they have resistances to these things,
Yeah.
they can, like traditional bricks, they can be vulnerable to scenario. Like I said, if you can just kill a Gremlin Swarm a turn, scenario is very live against Dark Menagerie. And they can be vulnerable to assassination, despite the fact that all the defenses I named can all work to protect your caster. As the game goes on and the brick starts to split apart, it becomes harder and harder to keep the caster safe. And with the exception of the child, and I guess the old witch, although she's kind of her own thing, but the exception of those casters, the Grimkin casters are fairly fragile once you can draw a bead on them.
Yeah.
So I think Grimkin are up there, and I think that's because they are the best brick archetype right now.
Okay, cool.
I don't.
And Skinner Malzahn is the third for 15 points.
Yeah, Skinner Moans is pretty good. I mean, I actually don't think it's absurd 50 points at all. It's terrible at 15 points. It's great at 28 points once you have a death knell.
Yeah. It's only the second best heavy in the faction, to be fair.
Yep.
Oh wow. So this is tier one. Anyone else that you'd put in this kind of same group of top tier?
The Scorn Battle Engine.
Yes.
For sub faction.
And the Scorn faction that gets carried on the back of it.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think, Tom, when the three of us, we were chatting after WTC last year, right? And one of the things you asked me was, which factions do you think are best right now? And one of the things I said to you was, Scorn are amazing. I'd never
Yeah.
seen them before that WTC, but oh my gosh, they're great. And you said the same thing, right?
Yeah. The turtles are absurd.
Yeah. Do you think it is just the turtles? Because I mean, the turtles are like that. They just have so many threats and so many vectors. Yeah, they're a nightmare to kill. You can't take systems offline. They can shoot heavies off the board, and they can mess up heavies in melee for days. And then they've also got like 1-inch impact attacks. And for some reason, their little legs carry them really fast as well. And they've got repos. So they've got like everything. It's brilliant. I love them. Do you think like outside of the turtles though? So if turtles, if Pagani gets his way and nerfs turtles at some point. He hasn't said that. I just want people to go a bit nuts on the phone. But if turtles were toned down a bit, and had one of those threat vectors, taken down or something, would Scorn still be up there? Is it just battle engines or is it the faction?
I think right. go on, Tom.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. I think this is a rare case of, I think the faction strength is actually just tied to how good the turtles are. Like, if they nerf the turtles, like a little bit, they move down a little bit. If they nerf it completely, the score might be, like, gone from the meta, pretty much. Because I really think it's all 100%. That faction is so good because of how good those balances are.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's really strange. And I do think that Scorn is probably fine without them. But I think it's like a more extreme version of what I mentioned with Signar, right? Where Signar is a perfectly fine faction with lots of good choices, but the raw power of Haley 3 and Nemo 3 keeps it on top. And I think the raw power of Turtles is what makes Scorn a top-tier faction right now. Basically, when I look at a Turtle, I see a model that is really fast, really hard-hitting, really hard to kill, with tons of attacks, high-quality attacks, control elements, resistant to control itself, able to boost, all for a low cost. And it's probably about 5 points under-costed for what it does.
Wow.
Like, wow. In the sense that it's better, I think, than any heavy warjack in the game, but it costs 16... Oh, sorry, war beast, but it costs 16 points.
17 points.
Oh, sorry, 17? Yeah, it's probably only 4 points undercut then.
Only 4 points. All right, yeah. Let's not go crazy. Come on.
But basically, it's like, it costs as much as a mid-tier heavy, but it's faster, tougher, better in melee, has a great gun, and has a lot of the perks of being a battle engine.
Hmm. How do you stack it up to the Stormstrider? Because, I mean, battle engine...
How would I compare it to Stormstrider? Well,
it is not comparable.
No, it's miles better.
Yeah.
It's got 12 more boxes, one more armor. Its gun is slightly worse, but actually not even significantly worse. And then it does something like 4 power 18 auto knockdown melee attacks at speed 8, the boosted attack rolls on its charge, and then knockdown after that. It's massively better than a Stormstrider.
But
it's
also
cheaper.
The Stormstrider's got repulsor field.
It does. Correct.
Okay, I feel like I've comprehensively lost that argument. Yeah. Fine.
No, I don't get me wrong. I think the Stormstrider's strong, but I think, for my money, the Scorn Battle Engine, the Animantrex, is the best model in the game for its points. And it's what right now is one of the... It's the reason why Scorn is very strong right now.
Okay. So let's come back to that, because that's really interesting comparing to the meta. So we've talked about a lot of external factors of the game changing the meta. And this could be some of the more internal faction points of the game that could change meta over the coming months, coming year. The good news is Scorn isn't in CID for at least a year, I don't think. So... You know, I've got 2 turtles. I'm going to play the bejesus out of them until they get nerfed.
And then I think the best thing about the turtles is when I asked the Dominic from the German team about how many turtles you play, it's like he says you play as many FA as they would be allowed in the list.
Yeah, no. If he could do, he'd just play all turtles.
Yeah.
And it would probably be a really good list, just like 4 huge bases, just like waddling around the table. They're not even waddling. They're like, you know, faster than some calf. It's brilliant.
Cool. Wonderful. So I think those 4 are the big dogs right now, and they're what I would consider to be the top tier of the meta.
Yep.
I think we're agreed on that point, right?
I think so. I'd be interested to hear your views on what do we actually mean by top tier. So if we use Mark II as a benchmark, top tier was if you're not playing this, you're doing it wrong.
No, I definitely don't think that's the case anymore.
Woohoo! It's good. Well done, PP. Good job.
So for me, when I say top tier, I think these are the things that are the strongest. But I think, like I said before, the meta's in the best place it's ever been. Any faction can win. I think the gap between the very top and the very bottom is narrow.
Yeah.
And I think the factions that we just discussed are all strong for the specific reasons we discussed, right? And if you took those reasons away, like if you took away for example, Black Industries from Crix, or Halley 3 from Signar, or Turtles from Scorn, or Dark Menagerie from Grimkin, then none of those factions would be the top. And it's only the fact that they have those small outliers that are a little above the power curve that keeps them ahead of the other contenders, who themselves are still really good.
That's interesting, because half of that list are things that I don't think we've seen nerfed, if at all, or certainly taken away. So like Grimkin probably won't ever lose DM, because limited faction, they don't have many themes. Mm-hmm. And likewise, I'm not sure Crix will see a massive nerf to or have that theme taken away, because Private Press have stated there on their design goals was making sure everyone's got a home, right? So
yeah, but I do think you could still see, as the meta changes, one of the things that will change is people will be increasingly taking lists that answer those particular things, because that's a relatively short list of specific threats, and the better you are answering them, the better that I think you can, whatever faction you're playing, the better you can play into the meta as a whole.
That makes sense. Yep, cool, like that.
Cool. So what do we think is the tier below this top tier?
I think the perfect thing that's to me at least, has the perfect, like, pretty okay faction with, like, some strong tools that is, like, not absurd. This is, like, pro.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, to me, right? Like, the Magic one, the Champion, Brick, plus, like, the Fenblade, I think it's really strong. And if you haven't thought about it, or like have never played against it, it can catch you by surprise. And even if you have played against it, it's still a really strong defensive brick, and that can hit really hard because it trolls. And then you have the control element from casters like Kogrimma with the Cloud Wall. You have Kalandra with this 18 inches of Starcross with the attachment. Like, the faction just really flexible and has like some pretty strong tools, but I don't think any of them are like quite as absurd as like a Scorn Turtle or like the Echoes.
So it sounds like you're saying, like with Trolls, it's more they've come out of CID recently and they've got some stuff that is asking some pretty serious questions. They're maybe not doing anything to answer things at the top. They're just they're a very difficult brick to crack. So like the Madrak 1 Champ Brick, the Borka 2 Beast Brick, and then Kogrimma, spraying casters down for days. They're just out there with some very, very tough things that if you're not prepared for either in list or certainly matchup time, you're going to struggle with, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think if Dark Menagerie wasn't out there, then Trolls would be the brick to beat right now, especially because they can do it in different ways. They can do their traditional Beast Bricks, but Madrak has the medium base infantry spam, and Kogrimma has her Cloud Ball. So they make a lot of very resilient lists in different ways. And one edge that they have over Grimkin is they have a lot more depth. And although you said, Rich, they don't answer things as well, I think they have the capability or the capacity to bring a lot more answers to the table than some factions.
Just on that, is something, questions and answers is something that's talked about a lot. What do you, when we talk about answers, what do we mean? Is it specifically to that top tier?
Yeah, I think when we talk about answers, we're really talking about counters, right? Things that are very strong against other options that your opponent plays. And we talk about answers because we talk about the things that we expect to see, and then we want to be taking counters to them. So I think answers always has to be in the context of what is popular right now, because you can only really answer what you expect to see.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's why I think in that second tier, it's why I love Convergence in there. Because I think Convergence is a faction that in a different meta might not be as strong, but because of what they are, they answer, so they speak a lot of tier one, and they can do it really well. Like Orion, I think I still think it's one of the best Halley 3, if not the best Halley 3 answers in the game. Mm-hmm. That cast is amazing. And they've got the magical sprays, they've got ways to see or deal with cloud walls. They've got ways to deal with high death, whilst they're with high arm. They've got loads going for them. They feel like a really good meta call at the minute.
I agree. I think they are maybe a little similar to Scorn in that they are crutching fairly hard on their battle engine.
Yeah.
But the difference being their battle engine isn't quite so undercosted.
it's only marginally undercosted.
Yeah,
it's not as fast. It doesn't repo, and it only attacks twice.
But it's got little robots.
Yeah,
it can't reliably kill a heavy in activation. So, but one of the things interesting about them is, like you said, I think Orion is great and has added a lot of versatility and power to the faction lineup and has made their two list pairs a lot stronger.
Yeah, that makes sense. So convergence potential, I mean, I don't know where they would sit in a different meta, but I think they're certainly pushing into top tier just because they aren't a lot of the top tier, I think.
Yep, definitely agree.
Cool. Who else have we got in this kind of this kind of tier two, so to speak?
Mercenaries.
What's good about them? What do they do at the minute? They've got Osrium, they've got Thexus, they've got Damiano Trenches, still good. And then they've got like the new Ashlyn and the Resistance Freedom. They've missed across.
Yeah, they have more strong archetypes than they've had in the past. Off the top of my head, I think of Osrum with, well, Osrum's got multiple builds, but it's basically Osrum Gunline or Osrum Combined Arms using Hammer Dwarves and Drillers. It's really strong. The Cephalix in general is a very strong list, usually with more infantry than heavies, but you can go either way.
Yep.
Lely's Resistance is strong primarily because you get Trencher Cloud Walls in every list. You take them with, what's his face, Major Harrison Gibbs, who gives your Lely's models reposition, and the Theme Force lets all your trenches be Lely's models, so they all advance forward, put down clouds, and reposition back. So you have a Cloud Wall all the time. That list is really good. Usually played with Ashlyn, but you can play it with a lot of casters.
Yeah.
And Irregulars is proving to be strong because it's one of the most versatile lists out there. So I think they're in a really good spot where they have multiple strong builds, some of which are question builds, like Osrum and Cephalix, and some of them are answers, especially Irregulars.
It feels a bit like they're kind of a budget Crix or budget Signar, depending on which pair you take.
Yeah, that was one of my... I was discussing them with one of our players on our WTC team recently, and my criticism of Ashlyn, Lely's Resistance, is it just feels a bit like playing a bad Haley 3.
Yeah.
But there's a lot to be said for having a depth of options. So while we might say Haley 3 is stronger, also Haley 3 is more likely to be seen and you can tech for more specifically. Whereas having, for example, the off-list in your pair also happen to have a Cloud Wall is a nice bonus.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like they've got a mix of Signar strength and Crix, and that they've got some very hard questions in terms of some of their power output. It's not as powerful as 83, but you've still got the Trencher Cloud Wall, and you've still got Thexus with a million dudes. But they've also got some similar strength of Crix, and that their themes can be quite diverse. So you can take two very powerful lists in two very diverse themes that are very hard to deal with.
Yeah, I also think they have the access to the most number of answer models. Like they have like answers to like most of the problems you can think about. Like, there's a stealth gremlin storm. What do we do? We have Ironhull to give magic weapons, and then we have the dwarf battle engine to strip stealth, or you have Reinhold to strip stealth, and then like you have there's the armor break issue. What do we do? We have access to Ragman, and you have access to harm from Ayanna Holt again. And then you just have a lot of answers to like the solos, which is I think the main strength of Mercs.
Do you think like Mercs and minions are advantaged in that way? Because they can take all the answer solos?
Mostly Mercs. Minions still lack enough good solos to fill the category, but they're getting there.
Well, they have a miss speaker.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Mm-hmm. And then they have a miss speaker.
Yeah, I think the thing that gives Mercs the edge is the Irregulars Theme Force lets them tailor lists in a way that other Theme Forces can't. right? And one of the criticisms I had when you asked before, can Theme Forces answer enough questions? I said that I thought they can answer some specific ones, but the problem is they only get one or two answers. Yeah. And that's not the case in irregulars, right? You can tailor your list to beat anything, but not necessarily everything. But just having that option to tailor into the meta is obviously powerful.
Yeah. So is there any other tier twos then, if we've got Trolls, Mercs, Convergence, and that kind of tier two?
Me and Pat, I wanted to put Circle in there also, but I think there's a debate about it.
Yeah, I had Circle. So when we were discussing this before, I had Circle as being below those. But Tom, give us the argument. Tell us why you think Circle are up there.
So I think Circle is also in our discussion for tier two. I think they're good list pairing is they're like a budget signal where their top two lists are very good and they ask like very specific questions and you can't answer. And if you pick the wrong list, it can be a very bad start to your game against Circle. Like the list pairing I'm thinking about is Una with from 6-2 Griffins and paired with either Bradagus or Kruger with a actually you can put Baldur 2 in there also, but any of the casters that runs a really good Bones of Orboros list. Like so where you have one side being like speed 7, defense 15, really fast stealth Griffins that hit with Primal and acts as a Hand of Fae and Flank can go up to as far as power 14 Hand of Fae Weapon Master. And then on the other side, you have armor 20 to like 21 Wolves that have a lot of boxes and they're quite immune to like the answer that you would normally drop into like the things that are good into Una. So I think the list I would put them in tier two because their top two lists complement each other really well and they answer and you can pick like casters to solve the problems that you can have in the meta. Like for example if you're seeing a lot of Nemos in your meta, you can pick Kruger, which completely shuts them down with his bubble shelter hands just making everything into lightning. And like if you want to break up a little bit more, you can pick Baldur too, which just has a spell that gives +3 armor to any model you want in your armor. And then Bradagus just for like a little more threat range and a little more punching power, and then just like and some spell denial with like Mystic. So I think they're in tier two because of the power level of their two lists and how flexible they can be and the tough questions they ask your opponent.
It feels like they're the first faction that is more on the question side, maybe, than answers.
Yeah.
And I wonder, is that why maybe we're thinking that they're between tier two and three, if we do a diplomatic vote and put them in tier two and a half? is it because actually they do have answers and they're asking questions, but they're still going to struggle to comprehensively answer the top tier ones? So are we by extension saying that it's better to have answers than questions in the current matter?
So I always think having the questions is better if your question is good enough, because your answers will, because in like tournament where they're playing like 4 to 6 rounds, right? Your answers are not gonna line up well, like overall, like in some situations, and in those situations, your list will struggle a bit. But I think a good question will always give you a better result if your like question is good enough. Like if your list is asked the questions like, I break really hard, can you crack it? And then like if you don't break hard enough, or really lose a scenario, like can't contest well enough, then I don't think that's a good question. But I think like the top tier list that ask like really hard to answer questions are the ones that are in tier one.
Yeah, I agree. What I'd ask you, Tom, in regards to Circle is if they're in this higher tier, why is it that we're not seeing more of them right now? Do you think it's just that Bones has been slow to catch on? I know that in the UK, the people that are playing Circle are playing Bones almost exclusively, but the faction seems to be less popular than it has been for a long time.
I think that's the case because of several reasons. One is just that there's a lot of choices to play right now. So like, you can have access to more. If you have access to more factions, they can play more things. And also think that people are still like kind of hung up about the nerfs. Like, even though it happened like a long time ago, I'm just looking back, and then you did get a nerf on the wolf. Like, but I do think people are still a little bit hung up about like the Sentry Stone nerfs, and then like the Griffin nerf, and then like the Una nerf, and then like so people after the general perception is that after something is nerfed, it's like not good anymore. So people are like it takes longer to people to like put them back on the table and then to play it. Especially with how like the War Machine works now with like the CID cycle, or just, like pushing out like different buffs to different things, people might be more susceptible to like other more like other shinier toys is what I think.
Yeah, definitely could be. That's really interesting. So in addition to Circle, which we've put as tier 2.5, what I'm going to label Circle is underrated, which is going to be my name for this bottom tier, because I think every faction right now is really good. I do agree with you that Circle is strong, and I think they're really underrated. And I would put probably every other faction that we haven't spoken about in this list. The next one that I want to mention is Legion, who I think are really strong right now, mainly off the back of Abbey 2.
Yes.
Go on. Why was that yes so emphatic?
Because, you go nuts on this one.
So one of the funniest things about Legion in Mark 3 has been that, a quick history from Mark 2 is just like, from Mark 2 to Mark 3, the transition for Legion is very rough because they lost a lot of their key tools they had in Mark 2, and then you gain some tools like the Hellmouth. Depends who you talk to, is either absurd or like just okay. And then you have like Abbey 2 is strong right now because Legion from Mark 2 to Mark transition from Mark 2 to Mark 3 is that they're half of their chassis got made slower and half of it got made faster. Like from the narrow pick, the non-reach heavies being a 1-inch melee, and then the narrow being generally just made cheaper and better. I think that makes the her a lot more appealing in general because she kind of replicates the threat ranges they had in Mark 2, except with them in Mark 3 where it's more heavy on heavy, so she can leverage the beast the best in faction, and which is why I think she's probably like strongest, if not tied with Fianna for like faction. And she also answers like a lot of questions.
Yeah.
In the meta. Like if the game is melee on melee, I think Abby 2 will generally come out ahead because of how sturdy she buffs up the models, and then she just also just really good at cracking bricks.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Go on, Rich. I know you want to say something.
It's the good old Grumblekins. She's very good into Grumblekins.
Yeah, I've played Dark Menagerie into Abbey 2 so many times now, in so many different configurations against so many players, and at this point I'm convinced that the matchup is probably 90% in Abby's favour. You have to get very lucky, or the Abbey 2 player has to do something incredibly wrong for that to be anything close to a game. That's not to say Grimkin can't play into Legion or Abbey 2, because you've got other lists, right? You've got Bump in the Night and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's one of the best matchups in the game, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, do you think that's why she's so strong? So she's the one who probably seems to align with what the faction was. And I know it's changing now with CID, but with the chassis getting upgraded and Abbey 2 still being, I think, the best piece caster there, and makes chassis that were somewhat uninspiring at the start of Mark 3, she actually makes them hit accurately and hard again. and also she deals with Grimkin. Is that why, when we talk about Legion, is that her main reason why she's in the pair and is the kind of exception to the rule of Legion?
Maybe. One of the things that I'd like to know to answer that question, Tom, is you said you thought she is advantaged in most melee versus melee matches. How do you think she plays into Crix?
Well, so my experience from that perspective is I normally want to see Abby do it in a Legion pairing. And then if they, so it's kind of weird because Legion has the other good thing against Crix in some, at least for me, was they also have really good assassination. So normally I would, against Abby 2, I would like to drop the Negra 1 with the gun lines, because one thing she is, she can suffer a bit is like from a control fee and like strong guns, kind of like pick off her beast before she gets it, she gets into you, then I think it's bad. But the issue with dropping the Negra into something like a Lilith 3 or like a Veil 2 is that they're strong. They have really good pinpoint assassination, which for a caster like Denegra, who's at 16, 14, and relying on stealth to save her is not going to do anything. So I do like Abby into Crix if they are more melee-focused, but with the advent of the Slayer spam list, I think that might change my opinions a bit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, for example, I do really like Abby 2 into Scar 1, for example. Like, I really enjoy that match with the Abby player.
Is it into what? Into the double Wraith Engine Scar 1?
Yeah.
What because, about like, the... Yep. Okay. What the about Magus. Single...
You just kill the Wraith Engines, right?
Yeah. Okay, cool. I was thinking about, does it still work into, like, a Scar 1 host with single Wraith Engine, and then... The Stalkers, because I saw, I think, Brandon Andrews was running around with that last year. It's like loads of Stalkers that will get feated on and trade up really hard because they all turn into monsters.
Yeah, I like it in that matchup because you out-threat them so much, right? So it, as a Scar player, you kind of have to just like, either you have to make hard decisions like, do I feat defensively and still lose anyways? Or just like wait till like she alphas everything and then... what I have left to recover, but that's very difficult with like with sprints and then just like the streams and good position. So
I think that's really interesting that I think Abby 2 exemplifies a really good point that we made earlier, which is she is strong right now because she plays really well into some of the top dogs.
Yeah.
And she's maybe the reason why Legion is underrated right now. Whereas in the past, Legion has been strong on the backs of other things, right? Like Fianna 2, for example,
was
very strong 6 months to a year ago. And she's still okay, but the meta has shifted in such a way where the things that answer her now are a bit more prevalent. And she's gone down in power, but Abby 2 has risen up.
Well, it's interesting. Sorry about you.
No, go on.
I say it's interesting that the thing that has risen up, or one of the things that has risen up that just rinses Fianna 2 is Nemo 3. So you've got like Abby 2 that's coming up that can deal with Crix and Grimkin. And then you've got the things that are taking Fianna 2 down are the things in that top tier again. So it feels like even though the game's quite close, that any faction I think could win a tournament on a given day in the right hands, it does feel like the top tier is kind of setting the pace and saying saying what is being taken a lot. They're kind of dictating a lot of the meta, I think.
Yeah.
Agreed. Nemo 3 brings up a good point about Legion. That faction is, at least currently before the CID rules hit, is quite susceptible to a good gun line. And then I think most Legion players will agree that they would rather not play against like a dedicated gun line. And if they do have to play it, then they require like good terrain and then like just some maybe some bad dice on their opponent's part. But before CID, they're not really built to beat a gun line, I would say. At least not favorably.
Cool.
Yeah. So we've got a few more factions we haven't talked about. Where do you guys think that minions stand right now?
I think it's about the pair, isn't it? I mean, Rask is a monster. And he's amazing. And I always feel on the look at Minions is that you've got a caster who is really, really good. You've got casters that ask some fairly hard questions, like the Maelok Gaiters, which is the kind of start of the rise of the medium-based Saban, kind of similar to Trolls, and similar to Manowar that will be coming out soon. But it's again, it's with Rask into some of the top tier. I think Rask can struggle into the Tubby gun line, potentially. Sorry, the Tubby being the Scorn battle engines. And also not sure he does a great job into Crix, because it's really difficult to trade into that army. So it feels like it's all about finding the pair, and if you find the pair, then they could go to tier one.
Yeah, that's been my thing with minions as well. It's, like, to me, I always think it seems to me like minion has always been the Rask show. It's just like Rask is so good, and you like add, like he has a really absurd spell list, has really good feat, and it has like support and has really good models to support him now with like the release of like the Soulslave, and then the Fog and Gives for the double enliven, free balance charge, and then you have Rage, Primal, you just have all the good tools to support him to make him like a really like S tier list. But no, I haven't really been convinced by any of the pairings people have come up with it. Like there have the second list has always been like just feel like okay as like a second thought, and they are not usually not played unless they are like forced to.
Yeah.
So that's been my thing with minions. It's just like, if they can have a really solid second list that can like play into more situation than one, I think that it would be like a really really top tier fact.
It does feel like with Rask as well, the bits that are tricky are the Haley 3 Cloud Wall. Like, yes, they have a Mist Speaker, but still that feels like a tough matchup for them. And the Nemo 3 matchup as well, because you've got a lot of high value. So it's like all the lessers, and the beasts aren't particularly tough. So you've got things like the spitters and some builds, but a lot of it's kind of ARM 18. And obviously the solos, things like Ryan Snapjaw and Rorschach and Brine, you can position with like Nemo 3 and just zap these off the table. So it's another one of those factions that's really, really good. It just feels like it's not great into Haley 3, Nemo 3, not great into Crix, not great into Scorn.
Yep, I agree. It's really good in its own merits, but it's not what you need right now in the meta, and it's too much to ask its paired list to deal with all those top dogs.
Yeah. I think that kind of, for me, segues quite nicely into Kador, who I think have got some really, really strong lists. And last year I was playing Vlad 1 a lot, so this was kind of Vlad 1, Rockets, Jax. And it's a really, really strong list. It's just, it didn't answer, especially at the time, and I think even more so now in some respects, it didn't answer Crix, it didn't answer Signar, and it was just too much for another list to do. To have one list that covers both of those is a big ask, especially for Kador that's traditionally struggled with those. However, Kador does have some really good stuff at the minute. You've got, Vlad 1 is still a powerhouse. I mean, rolling all the dice always helps. There's like Zakova 1, who I still think I think that's the best list in Kador, especially with Sophia. If only we could have magical weapons in that list, oh, that'd be glorious. Iona and Holt in Legion of Steel, I'd say that would potentially fix Kador.
Yeah, I think you're right that Zakova 1 is really strong and really underrated.
Yeah.
She doesn't see nearly enough play, which is partly just because Kador has a bunch of strong casters, but she's really, really good. And I think you're right that I think Legion of Steel is probably the single strongest list archetype that Kador has. Not necessarily that it's the best into the meta or anything like that, but I think if you look at it on its own merits, it's very, very hard for a lot of lists to deal with. And in particular, all of the counter-charging weapon masters and cavalry behind the screen of difficult to deal with infantry that are reasonably fast moving makes it a nightmare for many melee lists to deal with it.
Yep.
And then as soon as you pair that with a delivery mechanism, of which I agree with you, Zakova's Cloud Ball is the best, but you've got other options like Strakov 2 or whatever it might be. As soon as you pair that with delivery mechanism, it's a very, very strong archetype.
Yep, definitely agree. And it kind of similar thinking to Aldrich 2, how I was looking at in Legion of Steel for the same same reasons, but instead of a cloud wall, you've got the anti-shooting with Windstorm. But she's also got some fairly scary jack lists that do very well. I mean, things like Reconstruct on Kalor jacks can be super noxious. So she's got some great stuff there. I think overall with Kalor, I think where the faction is at the minute, there's been some really strong lists that have asked a lot of questions over the last 12 months. And Kalor's all about maybe taking those lists off the table for a while and putting stuff on to deal with some of that top tier. And that probably isn't like Vladborn Rockets. I'm pretty sure it's not. I feel Kalor's kind of gone through probably some of the biggest highs and lows of Mark III. And I think it's in the stage now, it's up to the Kalor community to look a bit further afield than some of the things that have been, you know, in place for like the last 12 months to come up with answers top tier. And that's hard for things like Karchev. Karchev got nerfed. Mad Dog's got nerfed. And what do we do as Kalor players? What's the next cheapest jack we can spam with Karchev? So it's kind of, I think like Kalor probably needs to just rethink. So I'm daydreaming a fair bit of kind of like, you know, different types of lists, using, you know, kind of martial jacks and getting my head around those a bit more and things like that to try and figure out how that can deal with top tier. But it feels like similar to minions. They've got some really strong lists. They can stomp some of the meta quite considerably, but it's just, can they come up against a Krix and Signar top eight at the tournament and punch through it with two lists?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just feels like their lists are all very good, but they ask them okay questions. But like when you look at the meta as a wide perspective, I just don't worry about Kalor when I'm building like a two list. Like when I'm solving for other factions, they kind of just get cashed in.
So is that like with Krix and then some of the bricks and some of the jack spam, you just kind of pick up Kalor by accident?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I think it goes back to this where we're kind of still playing a lot of the same stuff. So I think there's a few more cards coming out. CID is going to be really good. I think I'm very excited about Vlad 2 with Man of War medium base, because that's something that's difficult. They've got the armor that heavies typically trade with, but then you don't want to be trading, you know, warjacks for medium based infantry. So there could be some good stuff there. And I think, you know, things like Bombardiers or Hand of Fate, stuff like that, can just blow stuff up as well. Should be quite fun.
Yeah, yep. Definitely.
Cool, so who have you got left then? Is it Retribution and Menoth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't know a lot about Menoth. Harby's come back, which is petrifying. And I think some of her other themes, they kind of feel a bit the same as Kalor in a different way. That didn't make any sense at all. What I mean by that is they've had some very strong lists that have been a bit of a staple of the faction. And now they're starting to have, with the themes that were released kind of end of last year, we're starting to see some of their other casters come into the meta, and already noticed Menoth placing highly at tournaments. So, you know, certainly Harby coming back has been, a driver of that. So they're one that I'm quite interested to see. I think they're in this tier, but you can make an answer for them to be in certainly tier two. And depending on how some of their themes shake out, I think they could be just one, you know, go back to one of the factions that you have to think about when you put your tournaments together.
Yeah, I think for me, Menoth is a faction that has changed quite a lot.
Yeah.
From how it used to work traditionally at the start, during Mark II, and how it developed during Mark III and where it is right now. And it's been affected by theme lists a lot more than some factions. I think the traditional Menoth lists were kind of combined arms lists that leveraged powerful warjacks in combination with infantry, and they had elements of shooting and elements of melee. And these days, that's not so much the case. And when I think of competitive Menoth lists, I think about warjack spam, usually with a mom, and I think about infantry spam, which comes in flavors of Exemplar or Faithful Masses. And there's a couple of different casters that run that rail. Like you said, Harby runs it rail. I think Exemplars with Vindictus or with Testament are really, really good. But they've definitely, I think, shifted away from that combined arms and ranged element towards these more melee-centric skew builds, where they try to use their denial plus skew to overwhelm what their opponent is doing?
I think the problem with meta is just people playing too much on mod.
Controversial.
Yeah.
Wow.
So here's the thing, right? Amon hasn't changed at all from the beginning of Mark III to like end of to currently of Mark III. I was just never impressed with that caster from the beginning. Like, he has always just been okay, and he always has had the same problem of like when your feed turn goes really well, you have exposed yourself, and then you have a really shitty stat line, and generally what happens is when Amon has a really good feed turn, that leads to the two situations. Your opponent's down on attrition, and they see a caster that's not capping much, that's 16-14, and then it's like, oh, it's probably, let's try to go for it, and then his stat line doesn't hold up, and he falls over.
No, he doesn't fall over, Tom, because he can't be knocked.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my god. Yes, that's right. Like, mobility is a good spell. Like, it solves the protector jack, like, the Pathfinder issue. But, like, your threat rangers are still not great. And then you're a synergy caster, so you need to have multiple things in threat ranges for your life to pick up on, so then your heavies can get in on it. It just sounds like too much work relying on, like, mediocre war jacks.
From what you've just said, Tom, you're saying that it's too much work that can be easily played around as well?
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I think that's an interesting point of view. I personally don't agree. I think, although you can play around it, I think it's one of the stronger jack skews in the game right now. When I think about lists that routinely spam a lot of armor and boxes and run quickly into melee, I think about Vyros 2, and I think about Amon, and then that's my shortlist. I think that archetype is good, but Amon is one of the better casters to run it right now.
Okay, see, I think about Gatsby 3 more, because it's like you get more armor, and you're better on the approach against shooting, and then you have more jacks in general.
You're better on the approach than Menoth Warjacks. Are you sure about that?
Yeah, you have 10 jacks that's 13-21 path.
Yeah, and they've got like 10 jacks that can't be shot.
Well,
I suppose it depends specifically what you're dealing with, right?
Yeah.
The answers that Menoth have are more binary. Either it works completely or it doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
And high stats is more applicable in more different matchups.
I think also Slayers are just like when you get stuck in, the Slayers are harder to kill in melee because they are 13-19s as compared to either like 13-16s on a Dervish.
Yeah.
Or like 10-19 to 21 depending if it's like a Templar or like a Sanctifier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be true.
Yeah. So they're easier to crack once you get in there.
Yeah, I think what Amon has going for him over Slayers is he does higher overall damage output across his force. But like you said, that is something that can be played around or mitigated, right? Yeah. Like his best case scenario for damage output might be higher, barring like a ridiculous Gatsby feat turn or something. But it's quite easy to stop a lot of that damage, where it might be harder to stop like combo strikes from Slayers and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think through with that one. It's like he feels, when I've seen him in action, obviously my armor experience is Paul, who's England WTC player. He's just played that one since we knew Mark III, and he's quite clinical with it. And I think there's a player skill element there. Seems to do well, but I can't remember, even with some fairly high profile Menoth players, I can't remember them placing particularly well over the last 12 months.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the other thing is like If Amon was good, I feel like he would have done something by now.
Like taking down a national icon or something.
Or just like anything.
I don't know. I think Amon is good, and I would still expect to see him in most Menos pairs.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that maybe his challenge right now is he doesn't do that Jack spam build as well as some of the others.
Yeah. And that those some of the others are quite recent as well. They're not so if we put Amon outside though, so let's say yeah, agree to disagree on Amon, take him or leave him. Harbi has come back and yeah, she's caused me nightmares, you may have noticed. But what else have Menov got in the stable and more what can they do to answer the tier ones at the minute?
I do think like Testament was like an okay answer into some Kirk's build. Like when Ghostly was still around, I think Testament was like a really decent answer to it. And then Harbi when played right and can cause problem for Ricks, some Ricks, and then like, but like the problem with like the top tier is like Grimkin has they have pretty decent okay access to Grievous Wounds.
Well, they've got no Grievous Wounds exactly, but what they have is Entropic Aura on the Battle Engine.
Yeah,
which is incredible against Harbi.
Yep.
Yeah. You have that, and then you just don't want to play Harb. I don't generally Signar's been a really good matchup into Harbinger, and then you know Scorn just has a really good gun line because of the turtles. So
it's not great into Harbi because the turtles are only they're at 5 base. They get no nothing on medium bases. So and with D3 attacks, so doing 3 each, it's they're not great. If the Harbi player like pods out and shoots all the Reavers down, then you end up with turtles into the what's it usually the skirmishers kind of leading first.
Adrians?
Yeah, the Adrians, yeah. Especially with dig in and things like that. They can be very difficult to remove, so you're kind of relying on Tubby to kind of bock out just try and clear the infantry that way, but Harbi can punch through that. Like, she wins the focus war, the focus fury against Tubby. So I don't think Harvey's a great matchup for Tubby, but...
Well, in that matchup, like, the assassination threat on Harbi...
There is always that, Thomas. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm imagining, like, you go in with, like, Turtles to, like, force a bunch of, like, some number of martyrs, and then, like, you have the Reaver's DRA, you have the spell arcing from Tubby, like, and then your feat is quite devastating.
How does the feat change things? So I guess you hit more stuff.
Yeah.
Harbi goes down to... I guess this makes the assassination easier, but...
Yeah.
So it feels like it's the old Harbi game plan. It's like... pretend that you're getting really tilted with loads of models dying. We're like, oh my god, I can't believe that you're marching all this stuff and then you just kill Harbi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the other list that I like that I mentioned already is the Exemplar theme. And the reason I like that is it's really good in the current scenario packet because it's really fast.
Yeah.
You have a lot of AD models. You have... Is it +2-inch deployment with that theme? I think that's the speed buff they get. So when you're running, for example, 20 errants who are ADing plus that extra distance, and then you're backing them up with a dozen or two dozen Knights Exemplar, you're just spamming a lot of dudes. And I think it's one of the stronger Weapon Master spams that's around right now. I don't think that kind of list is especially good. And I do think that some of the other factions can run it, but it's not their main... and into just as well, but it's not why we consider them good. So I wouldn't say it's any better than, for example, Scorn running a bunch of Stone Guys. I forgot what they're called. And I don't think it's particularly better than Dark Host. But I do think it's a strong list build, and the speed is something that helps give it an edge.
Yeah, agree with that. So certainly there's enough around Manoth. They've got some good answers At the minute, and they've got some kind of old flames coming back that could shake out and change over the next couple of months as well. But they've got some good stuff in there.
Yep.
Yep.
So the last faction that we haven't yet talked about is Retribution.
Yeah.
Which is weird because I always thought they were like decent, but then they haven't done really well recently in like tournaments. And then you have these things, all those like that. That's the people do after a tournament, and they have always like scored really low and like near, almost near the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something with stats. I just want to flag up on this that I think is interesting is some of the factions that are lower down are factions that people have moved away from for a period of time, or maybe weren't particularly well played because there weren't particularly great in Mark II. And I feel over the last 12 months, like when people have changed faction, it's been quite compelling to go to Signar, Krix, Grimkin, Scorn, or something like that. So I haven't seen many players moving, you know, and kind of coming to things like Kador, Rhett, even Circle. Mm-hmm. Some of the people who had those factions are maybe starting to dust them off and put them on the table. But I think some of it's just it goes back to what you said initially, Pat. You've got within tier one, it's a mix of some very strong things that are also quite prevalent at the minute. And I think that's because people have kind of moved towards those factions, either at the start of Mark III or during Mark III. So it might just be there aren't that many people waving a flag for Rhett.
Yeah, definitely possible. I think Rhett does have some strong things going for it. But those things maybe aren't quite as powerful as what the top dogs are currently using. For me, the models that stand out in Rhett as being pretty good are the halberdiers in their theme force where they can advance move, and yep, their battle engines, which do a good amount of damage, and they're fairly comparable to something like a Stormstrider.
Yep.
But they don't, although a lot of their stuff is solid, it's not very problematic or difficult to deal with, you know, it's just good. And I think the same is probably true of their casters. I personally really like Kaelissa as a great all-comers caster, and I've always been a fan of Rahn, although Rahn in particular seems to have perversely suffered from the release of Eilish Garrity, who's in loads and loads of lists and really makes it difficult for him to use his battle mages effectively.
Yes, yeah, I agree with that. And it'll be interesting to see if the, certainly for Scorn, the Eilish Mistspeaker, choice, which is why kind of, you know, Mercs might have an edge because they can choose Orsos and Taylor. But yeah, choosing either Eilish or the Mistspeaker. Eilish has been in a lot of lists up to now. I think the Mistspeaker is going to start being seen more because mm-hmm. of things like Cloud Walls, Incorporeal, etc. So be interested to see if that changes Rahn or brings Rahn back.
Yeah. I think Retribution's like greatest strength is probably also like it's one of his like reasons it's not like being as really powerful. It's like their units are all really like fair, and their faction just feels really fair, which is good because it makes like most of their units like solid playables. But but then the other issue is just like they don't have anything, they don't do anything absurd, which in terms of like power level is not great.
I really like Varus too. I think Varus too is a very very strong caster, but again, he's got a number of options to pair with him. I think that's when you get into like Issy with the battle mages, or Rahn with the mages and things like that, and Strikeforce and stuff. So, yeah. Was it the Alara 2 Halb list that kind of turned up and then got caught in a crossfire of Krix pretty quickly? It's like three Halbs.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think maybe that's another thing as well. It's just some of the lists have just been picked up in crossfire, like the suppression tanker in Kador. I'd take that to play Krix. And it just so happens to make it very difficult for some other single wound infantry lists.
Yeah, halberdiers, like I said, I think they're really strong, but they're a great example of that, where they die to any anti-infantry tech. And if you're planning to see things like Zatixis Raiders, then you can certainly handle halberdiers.
Yeah. It's interesting for anyone listening to this and thinking through their faction, because most factions have an infantry theme and jack theme and... Yeah, well, those are kind of the two archetypes, and you can go from there. But with infantry, like some of the other infantry lists we've talked about that are better are ones that mitigate that. It's like having a delivery mechanism, be it Zakova one in Legion of Steel, etc. So I think it's something to think about when people are building lists, is just to, figure out if people's quick answers are also going to beat yours. And if so, think about maybe changing your list pair or your caster to deliver infantry. So there's going to be more and more infantry hate coming out.
Yeah, and certainly I don't think Retribution have any casters that are especially good at delivering their infantry. I mean, they can power the infantry up with Assyria. They can deny some damage with Kaelissa, but not. They can't shove their army into your throat and feet and expect it to live. And Alara can give it a very long threat range, and if it's long enough, then maybe that's enough. But it has a hard time protecting the very squishy infantry from range fire.
Yeah, and it's weird because they had the guys that stop blast damage, so they have those. And yeah, it still feels like they kind of just struggle with some of the anti-infantry stuff. I feel like
Well,
Invictors are,
themes, right? They
yeah,
can't
things,
stop blast damage and take the models that want to be protected from that.
It is quite unfortunate. And then, like, I think Syria is probably the best at delivering infantry because she has Crusader's Call to just beat them up and then also have Blinding Light to stop the guns from shooting it. So I will look into that. But the issue with that is, like, you really want her to run a gun line because of how guns work with science importance, but, like, then you also want her to deliver infantry. So that's kind of the issue.
Yeah, she's great at buffing everything, but she doesn't do any work herself, and you always have to make difficult compromises with the list.
So I still like with on the infantry side, I'm still a fan of the K with space hoppers and then the Invictors, because while okay, she's got a way of delivering them, but even when you do shoot them, you pay for it, and they can hit really hard and exceptionally get there, and they can withstand some of the shooting, especially with like Iron Zeal, etc. So I think I'd probably, if I was playing, I'd be taking those over helps.
So that's which theme force is that?
Oh, I can't remember which one it is. One
Are
second,
you
I'll have it now.
playing? So is it a theme force that lets you take Invictors plus battle engines? I assume that's what you meant with space hoppers, right?
Yeah, it's either that or is it a battle engine and a colossal, like a Hyperion or something. I know very different models. Let's have a look.
Can
Retribution
you
is it?
take a battle engine with Dawnguard? Because I assume that's the Invictor theme.
Let's have a look. It's not Forges, it's a Jack one, isn't it?
Yeah, Fortress of the Jack.
And then Defenders of Ios
It's
is
the catch-all
Halbs.
theme that lets you spam halberdiers.
Yep.
Yeah,
And
the
then.
Hellscar theme.
But it's a bit of everything.
And then the Dawnguard one is the Dawnguard one. You can take Duster, Sentinels, and oh, you can. That's the Dawnguard tier you're talking about.
Yeah, so can you take battle engines in that?
Let's see. I don't believe
I
so,
don't think
but.
so.
No, you cannot take Dawnguard. You cannot take Battle Engines, the Legion of the Dawn.
Is it, what's it
Yeah.
called? Legion of
Yeah. Oh,
So,
yeah.
one of the challenges that Rhett has right now is their theme forces are quite restrictive, and
Yeah.
it makes it, it's similar to Kador, it makes it difficult to come up with a good pair that can play into the very diverse field that we see right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, Legion of Dawn, you'd have to, if you wanted the anchor, you can, it'd have to be a colossal as opposed to space hopper. Yeah, interesting stuff. But I mean, that kind of feels like a good point to end on this, is that we've got every faction, we've had stuff that's very strong with all of this. The limiting factor, so to speak, seem to be what's at the top of the pile. And we've already talked about how that's changing quite a lot. So if you are feeling a bit down in your faction at the minute, then actually there's probably more in there to explore, but also it's probably not going to stay like this. Like I think we're going to have more of a cycle over the over Mark III. And also, just what's your views, what's your guys' views on the spread from tier 1 to 3? Like how we've talked through three tiers. I think people typically go tier 1 is broken, tier 2 is okay, tier 3 is unplayable trash. Like how
That's definitely not the case. I think tier one is the best because that's tier one, right? But I think tier two is really good and tier three is underrated. I think every single faction right now is good and strong enough to win an event. I guess that's what I wanted to say. Tom, over to you.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's definitely It's definitely less spread out than Mark II, or I remember ranking factions in Mark II, thinking like, and here you have critics who's just like really good against everything, and you have supporters unplayable against everything.
Yeah.
It's definitely a good change from Mark II to Mark III, having more like the better balance overall.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the last thing I just wanted to wrap us up on, Rich, because I think you did a good job of summarizing, but just to recap, we had in the top tier Grimkin, Signar, Krix, and Scorn.
Yep.
In tier two, so good solid choices were Trolls, Mercenaries, and Convergence.
Yep.
Possibly Circle.
Yep.
And in tier three, underrated factions were Circle, Protectorate, Legion, Minions, Retribution, and Kador.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like you said, things are going to change. I would be really interested to revisit this topic 6 months from now and see where things stand, because it's not going to be the same.
Yeah. I think WTC this year is going to be super interesting as well. Because it'll be the first year where all the themes are out and most of the quote-unquote underpowered factions have had some form of CID. So Circle, Trolls, Legion have all gone through it. And then we'll also have our Grimkin in the meta and our second limited release faction as well with the new Steam World. So there's a lot going on this year that's going to make WTC really interesting.
Sure.
So maybe after when the list drops for WTC, we can do it then and just have a look at what the faction looks like and revisit this going into that.
Yep.
I look forward to it.
Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a good one.
Awesome. All right, this is bye from me.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.